This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, a very, very tough day for us today. Of course, Bibas family, Shiri and her two sons, Ariel and Kfir, will be buried today. And in fact, as we speak at this very, very hour, the funeral cortege will be leaving from the area of Rishon LeZion, which is the area where the Abu Kabir Forensics Institute is, just in the southern part of Tel Aviv. And the procession will take a route towards Kibbutz Nir Oz in the Gaza envelope area, which is where the funeral will take place. We're expecting the eulogies to be live streamed at around 11:30 this morning. And the funeral, as I've said before, is a private funeral, so there are no outsiders, government officials, outsiders, people who are just wanting to express their solidarity with the family, not invited. It's a closed funeral, but we're expecting thousands of people to line the route all the way from Rishon LeZion to Kibbutz Nir Oz, which is a fair distance. And, of course, orange shirts, orange balloons, very much in evidence today. And the Knesset last night was lit up in orange in order to mark this very, very momentous moment in a negative sense. But nonetheless, this is a moment that is very much being felt by all of us here. And it follows on the funeral yesterday of Oded Lifshitz, who was the oldest hostage, 83 years old. And just to be clear, Oded and his wife Yocheved, who is 86, were kidnapped from their home in Kibbutz Nir Oz, alive. Yocheved was returned in the initial hostage release phase, the very, very first phase. And at that stage, my understanding is that Oded was alive. He left him behind and he was alive. So since then, he was killed by Hamas. And I think that for me, the quote of the day comes from the mouth of Yocheved Lifshitz, 86 years old. They were married for 63 years and lived on Kibbutz Nir Oz, one of the founders of the kibbutz and really one of the mainstay, one of the really founding rocks of the kibbutz. And Yocheved said the following at Oded's funeral yesterday. She said, "Our abduction and your death have shaken me to the core. We fought all through the years for social justice, for peace. To my sorrow, we were hit by a terrible blow by those we helped on the other side. I stand here staggered to see the number of graves and the terrible destruction of our community that was completely abandoned on October the 7th. Some very, very strong,
very strong
and loaded words from Yocheved Lifshitz. And I just want the listeners to have some time to think about that, because there are many people who are saying, as a result of this, that we shouldn't be seeking peace and that we shouldn't be seeking justice and that we shouldn't be seeking social equality, because this is these are the thanks that we receive in return. And I just wonder whether that's the right conclusion or not for us to reach in light of everything that's happened. And clearly the pain is still very fresh and we still feel very angry about many, many things that happened. But is that the right response to this? And as we welcome the Hebrew month of Adar next week, I think we should talk a little bit more about this because the Adar, of course, invokes Amalek and the fact that we are commanded to remember Amalek. And who is Amalek in today's world? And what does it mean to remember Amalek as we move into the month of Adar? And I'm not going to say too much more about that now, but I think perhaps next week, and I encourage listeners to get involved as well. Let's talk about what the significance of Adar is and remembering Amalek in view of all of that we're going through right now.
So interestingly enough, I had a conversation yesterday on air with Aviva Siegel. I spoke to her prior to Keith, her husband's being released soon after she was, or sometime after she was released. But then we spoke to her yesterday, and she hasn't given up on, and she still believes that just like she's a good person, there have to be good people everywhere, and that there must be hope. So that's her view on it, which was very, very interesting to hear. But I think people have very, very different experiences and feelings, and certainly you can't criticize or stand in judgment of the comments that you referred to from the funeral. An agreement is reported to have been reached over the current crisis in the hostage deal process. So what is this agreement now, and what is phase two?
So just to remind listeners, the phase one of the hostage release involved releasing 33 Israeli hostages from Gaza, and there was a formula that was agreed upon as to how many Palestinian prisoners, terrorists, many of them with blood on their hands, many of them having been involved in acts of terror that killed Israelis over the years, how many of those prisoners would be released from Israeli prisons according to the formula. We agreed, as I said, an initial list of 33 names. Of those 33 names, we've received 29 either live or in coffins, unfortunately. So there still remains, there are still four remaining names who we have not yet received back. And we know, we accept that those four remaining names are no longer alive. And so the current impasse resulted from, first of all, on Saturday, Israel refusing to release the prisoners that should have been released on Saturday, according to the formula, when we received six hostages back from Gaza. And of course, the four remaining names of Israeli hostages who've still not been received back under phase one. So we understand now that the agreement is that within the next 24 hours, four bodies will be released via Egypt. And Israel has actually requested this in order to prevent the farce of the celebrations and the ceremonies and the whole production that went around the release of the hostages. Israel has said, please pass the four bodies to Egypt. We will pick them up from Egypt. We will arrange with the Egyptians to pick those up and bring them to Israel, bring them home for burial. We will, in parallel, release the prisoners that we have agreed to release under stage one. And so I understand that that has all been resolved, and that within the course of the next 24 hours, we should see all of that take place. And hopefully by the time I speak to you tomorrow, we will be able to say that that is done, to confirm that the four bodies that have been released have been positively identified to be the four individuals who are on the list. And of course, the prisoners have been released as agreed. So that is the immediate resolution to the current impasse. Now about phase two, I'm still very, very confused about phase two. And the reason I'm confused about phase two is because Hamas, on the one hand, is saying we are progressing with phase two, but phase two will only progress according to our timetable and according to what we demand. However, for those people who recall what one of the main points and the requirements of phase two is, it is that Hamas is removed from power in Gaza. That is one of the key principles that was agreed upon with the Egyptians and the Qataris and the Americans of phase two. So I can't understand how Hamas are saying that they will be controlling everything that surrounds what goes on in phase two. Steve Witkoff, the White House special representative, has been very involved in calls with the Egyptians and the Qataris and the Israelis, and is reported to have met with representatives from the Israeli government at least four times over the last few days. And he made a statement to say that phase two will proceed and that Hamas will be removed from power. And I just hear different messages coming from different sides, which makes me wonder how we can really proceed with phase two. Israel is demanding that for phase two, all remaining hostages be released in one go. There are 62 remaining Israelis in Gaza. Many of them we already have confirmed are no longer alive. So Israel is saying everybody needs to come home. Alive or dead, everybody needs to come home in one go, not as part of a phased approach that we've seen for phase one. Everybody in one go. And of course, Israel is expecting Hamas to be removed from power. And in return for that, Israel will withdraw from the Gaza Strip and the ceasefire will effectively be made permanent. Those are the main principles relating to the next phase. But as I say, you know, everybody's kind of making very, very positive statements about the progress towards phase two. And yet the positive statements that are being made seem to be directly contradictory to one another, depending on which side you're listening to. So I think we're going to just wait and see, first of all, to get through the next 24 hours, to get the four bodies home, to see the prisoners released, and then we will see what the next phase will bring. But I suspect that there's still quite a lot of discussion and there's still quite a lot of disagreement in the mix, even though everybody seems to be very clear that it's all agreed upon.
Iran is on high alert in anticipation of a possible joint U.S.-Israel airstrike against nuclear facilities. Why is there concern now? What are we hearing?
Well, I think that, I mean, Iran has obviously been concerned already for some time. But it's interesting that during the years of the Biden administration, there were no public statements about Iran being concerned and being on high alert. And now, with a new administration having taken office in the United States, my sense is that Iran is very much under pressure and believing that with the new president in office, there is every possibility that somehow Prime Minister Netanyahu may have been able to convince President Trump to carry out a strike directly against the Iranian nuclear facilities in coordination with the US. What we saw from the Biden administration is that while they were willing to help Israel defend against an attack by Iran, the US was not, under that administration, willing to carry out attacks against Iran, and of course, particularly not against the nuclear facilities. Now we're seeing a completely different atmosphere. And one of the, I think one of the main reasons why Iran is so concerned is that obviously Israel did manage to destroy much of its anti-air defense system during Israel's last attack against Iran. There was a focus, Israel really focused on those anti-air defense missiles systems that were being deployed in Iraq. Many of them were actually Russian systems that were destroyed by Israel, which effectively left the skies over Iran very clear and open to be used by enemies to carry out attacks against Iranian facilities. That was never really exploited once the air defense systems were taken out. But now Iran fears that there may well be an exploitation of that weakness and apparently is working furiously to try somehow to strengthen its air defense missile systems. And I'm guessing working with Russia in order to achieve that. So I understand that there's a lot of work going on in Iran to try somehow to re-establish those air defense missile systems, fearing that Israel and the U.S. might well coordinate to carry out an attack. Interesting that Iran, being one of the major providers of raw material for energy in the world, of course, being such a huge oil producer. And yet in its own country, was apparently yesterday, three quarters of the country was without energy for an extended period of time because their own internal energy system isn't working very well. And I think that that's partially the result of the US sanctions, which are really beginning to bite in Iran. It's a very interesting separate discussion to hold about what's going on in Iran right now.
Absolutely. I don't want to let you go before asking you this quickly. The Mossad was given an award for the pager attack. Has anything been made public about this? I didn't know about this at all.
So, yeah, yesterday, David Barnea, Didi Barnea, received an award that was given to him by the Institute for National Security Studies. And the award was given to him on behalf of the Mossad for the beep attack, the pager attack, carried out against Hezbollah. And he did make one or two little snippets known about some of the things that were going on. The first of which really surprised me, he claims that the first 500 pages were sent out into Lebanon only a few weeks before October the 7th. So this is something that had been distributed relatively recently. And it seems as if though many more beyond the first 500 were actually being distributed once the war had already broken out, that this was an ongoing exercise in parallel to the war that the IDF was carrying out in Gaza and trying to work on retrieving hostages and preventing Israeli citizens from being attacked by Gaza. The Mossad was working separately to somehow send out more and more of these pages, these beepers, to the Hezbollah operatives in Lebanon. So that was the first thing that was really, really surprising to me. He also spoke a little bit about the people in the Mossad who came up with the idea, how it was distributed, what was done. All very, very fascinating indeed. But what he did say, which I can absolutely associate with, he said, as far as he's concerned, the moment that the pages were detonated changed the whole war, not only in the north, but indeed in the south as well. And I would even go further, and I would say that pager attack potentially changed the face of the Middle East.
Very, very interesting, and well deserved. I think it was an incredibly, incredibly powerful and well planned operation. It is 8:01. Anthony Wright, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.